I'm speaking today with Councilmember James Rodriguez, who is the incumbent in District I. And Councilman, first thing I want to say is congratulations on the birth of your first child.
Thank you very much.
Since I think most people say that having children kind of changes their view of everything, how would you say that has changed how you feel about being a council member or how you approach being a council member?
Yeah, and thank you for the congratulations, Charles. It really reinforces what I do for a living, and serving the residents of District I is the best job I've ever had, and so I certainly enjoy my service, my public service. But having a child and raising him in the district, you just want to make sure that we have safe neighborhoods and that we continue to deliver more projects and we have the necessary green space and that our air quality is better. And so, when you have your child, you want to make sure that all these things happen for this child. And so I think of all the other kids in District I and the other parents, and so it really reinforces what we're trying to do with the council table.
Now, you're in your first term. You had, of course, been, I believe, chief of staff to the previous incumbent in District I, Carol Alvarado. How has being the council member been different from working for a council member?
The working for the council member certainly was it was the best experience, prior to getting to being the council member. So learning how the office functions, developing relationships with department directors and other council staff members was really key to having a successful first term in office. But when you're the council member, the buck stops with the council member. And so as a staffer, I didn't make policy decisions, and now as a council member, you're in charge of your staff, but also making good, sound decisions and making sure that you're the advocate for your constituents. And when somebody has an issue in the district, they go to you. And so, and I love that responsibility, and I just really enjoy the work that we do on a daily basis.
Now, for the first 6 months of this year, with the District H seat being open, you were the only Latino member of City Council. There's a lot of attention paid to that fact and to you as a result. Talk to me a little bit about that experience. What was that like, and how do you think that has affected you?
Well, it really was an interesting experience. Past councils have had as many as 4 Latino council members on the council, and so having just one really increased my workload, because not only we were dealing with issues in the immigrant community, but District H had some issues with crime, and so a lot of those constituents were coming to us because we're sister districts and so close in proximity. So I enjoyed helping out in District H. It gave me an opportunity to work with some really great civic clubs, really organized leaders, and so I enjoyed doing that. But also, I'm glad that we have Ed Gonzalez there now, too, because we can both team up. We both share Denver Harbor, some of the 2nd Ward Eastwood area, and it certainly helps to have a strong advocate for those neighborhoods when we're trying to put additional resources on the ground, such as police and fire resources. So it was a great experience. It did, I guess it focused a lot of attention because our population of this city, we're close to, this next census will probably show that Latinos are the majority in this city, and but the fact that we only have one Latino on council is somewhat is disturbing, but that means we have to get out and start working and voting and organizing as a community to get more representation.
Yeah, I guess to some extent it starts with making sure there's candidates on the ballot. I don't mean to put this on you, but since you were the focus during this time, I'll ask you, what needs to be done to increase Latino representation, not just in city government, but all levels of government?
Well, I'm really proud of the work we've done with our Latino Summit. I've hosted the Houston Area Latino Summit. We've had 2 summits, and we focused on engaging and communicating with Hispanic leaders across the city. And so somebody had asked what we accomplished. I think first and foremost is that we got 300 Latino leaders in a room, and we were able to dialogue and talk about issues in the community. The purpose of Latino Summit is to educate a community, to talk about political opportunities, to show numbers and where we have the opportunity to win some Latino seats. And so we've had presentations by Dr. Kleinberg, Bob Stein, and other notable Houstonians. But what we have to do is make sure that we're talking with people, we're organizing, we're getting young candidates and people excited and engaged in the political process. And so that's what the whole goal of the Latino Summit has been. But we focused on different topics, political empowerment, business, public safety, and also education. So I look forward to continuing these summits, and hopefully that you know, we'll recruit some more candidates. And just as a side note, several District H candidates for the special election said that they were really inspired by our Latino Summit, and that really gave them the confidence to run this last time. So I'm excited. We're starting to see new folks come into the process. They're volunteering. People are getting involved in local campaigns, and more candidates are coming about it. So if we're able to help in that respect, then I feel that we're you know, at least moving forward and trying to help with this issue.
Well, and of course, in 2 years' time, the city is going to be redrawing council lines and adding two more district council seats. Obviously, one of the goals that some folks have in mind is to use that to increase Latino representation on council. How do you see that happening? I mean, it seems to me that one issue that may be a barrier to that is simply that, you know, whereas many Latino citizens are concentrated in the H and I district areas, they're also spread all around the city, so it's hard to imagine where another quote-unquote Latino district would be.
Yeah, you know, I think we're going to have to rely on experts and folks that have done this before. But obviously, you look at population and numbers. That's why the census is really key, to really get an accurate count of where.
And you're working with that process as well.
Yes, sir. I'm the co-chair of the city's census effort, and the mayor established the Houston Complete Count Committee and has asked me to serve as chair. And so we're working on the outreach, the fundraising. There's an RFP out to get some to get a group of consultants to come in and help us with this effort. But we're really relying on the grassroots efforts and also local businesses to help us with this. And the mayor did we did fund $500,000 out of the city budget for this. But I think we'll probably need more money. So hopefully, when the next administration comes in, they can follow suit and look for funds to do this. But I think we're going to have to get an accurate count, look where folks are, let's figure out who's out there, and then we'll draw the lines accordingly. But right now it's kind of hard to say where that would go. I mean, I've heard folks say maybe the Gulfton area, Southwest, could be an opportunity district. We just don't know yet, but it's something that we're working on and we're going to pay close attention to.
Okay. Seems like there's been a lot of stuff going on right in District I, especially with the construction of the Harrisburg Light Rail Line. Seems like, there's been a number of issues where Metro and, the neighborhood have had some contentions. There was the, let's start with the overpass that they want to build. A lot of people would prefer to see that as an underpass. Where does that stand right now?
Right now, the mayor had come back with a compromise, and instead of doing a complete overpass with vehicular traffic and a rail car, we're just going to do a rail line, just the rail line going over the railroad tracks. Now, we've been working with the East End Rail Subcommittee, the Eastern Chamber Rail Subcommittee, and they have a proposal on the table to do an underpass. And I've looked at some of the numbers and the engineering studies, and I think it could be a viable option. So the next step is to get in front of the mayor and representatives from Metro to really flush this the proposal out to see if it is doable. And I'm excited that, hopefully we can come to a compromise. We want to make sure that, my goal is to get this rail line built and to make sure it services my district, because the original proposal had it stopping right at the tracks and not getting over to the Magnolia Transit Center, which I think is unacceptable. You have to have connectivity in order for these rail lines to work. And so, I really appreciate the mayor working with the community. He's taken a real active role in making sure that we're talking with Metro and that there's good communication, because we have had some communication problems with Metro, obviously.
And that was going to be my next question. I mean, there was the issue of the rail storage yard that people said they didn't know about until Metro sprung on them. There was the recent issue with that Art Deco, theater with the clock that, they thought Metro had an agreement to save it, and then they were going to be condemned, and they wound up saving part of it. What's going on with Metro's communications with the neighborhood? Is it getting better?
That's it's getting better in the sense that, you know, that Metro is talking. We have community advisory board meetings. I think they still have a ways to go. They need to be more transparent, and we can always be better at getting that information in a timely manner. I feel they've opened the doors to me and then been pretty receptive to our office, and but they need to do that, you know, community wide. So I want to commend Councilmember Lovell and Councilmember Gonzalez on saving that historic facade. And the last plan I saw is that it may be put into Eastwood Park as some sort of monument. And so I think that's really neat that we were able to preserve the facade. The S&I facility, again, we were told that it was a real estate transaction. It's in the it's on the District H side. So I will support my Councilmember Gonzalez in whatever way, which way he wishes to proceed. So. You know, hopefully, if they do build this facility, that there is a community purpose. They can actually, you know, hold civic club meetings. There could be a police storefront, some retail for the neighborhood. I think that's what some of the constituents had asked for in the meantime. So my hope is that Metro will listen to their input and work with the community. And if they don't do that, then council will be all over that issue.
You know, you get the, I at least have gotten the impression from some of the chronicle coverage of some of these, you know, points of contention that, you know, the neighborhood maybe isn't as supportive of what Metro was doing as it was when they first voted on this. Would you say that's the case?
I think by and large everyone wants this rail line to succeed, and people want rail in Harrisburg. But there are concerns, you know, you have business concerns, access to the business, if the construction is going to interrupt service, things like that. So you do have those legitimate concerns and issues. Metro has to do a better job, obviously, of winning the hearts and minds out there, because they, in the past, and before I got on council, there was a lot of issues with transparency and communication. I think they've done a better job in communicating and, like I said, having the community advisory board meetings. They've had outreach consultants go out and visit with civic clubs. So, and from what I understand, that contract's actually up now, and so they're renegotiating another contract with outreach consultants. So hopefully they can get that resolved really soon. But with any major project, you are going to have obstacles, and but we want to make sure that our constituents are heard and that their issues are addressed.
Okay. I guess the other big thing that I think of in District I has been the ongoing saga with Dynamo Stadium. First, you know, where does that stand right now?
The last update I had was that the city, that we're ready to go on the city's end, and the county, there's back and forth negotiations with the county. County sent over some terms that they'd like the city to look at, and a few of those were looking at creating a TERS near the Harris County Jail facility, and a TERS around the Astrodome complex. So I know our city legal department is looking at that, the mayor's offices, as well as Andy Aiken's public workshop. So I think there's still some negotiations. I'm confident we can get something done, because our constituents really, you know, they support the Dynamo. I think it'd be a great economic boost for that area, and the jobs that it'll create. So I think it'd be a good program, but we need to make sure that it's a good deal and that both the county and the city come out as winners.
I mean, of course, just in the news was, you know, word that, you know, Harris County had some issues regarding its bond insurer over debt for, you know, the Reliant and Toyota and Minute Maid, and that the county, you know, may wind up being on the hook for some money that it wasn't expecting to pay. Now, I've been told and talking to other people that they think, you know, it's going to be covered. They're not going to be taxpayer funds being used because that was promised in the referendum and that wouldn't happen. But I guess the question is, you know, what safeguards will exist to ensure that, you know, the city and or the county a few years down the line putting up money for a Dynamo Stadium won't be in a similar position?
So, you know, I haven't looked at I know the deal's changed since I probably first looked at it, but about 80 to 90% of the construction costs were going to be on the Dynamo. So they're funding a majority of the construction costs. The city has worked with the TERS to purchase the land, the 15 acres in East Downtown. So, and that's deemed for a public use. So if the deal doesn't go through, we still have that land and we'll be able to use it for maybe another facility or to put it back on the market. As far as the county, you know, part of the deal that I saw was that they would participate in the TERS, and so they would forego or some of the tax increment there in the area, and so and participate as the development occurred. So I think for being, you know, making sure that we're not using taxpayer money, of course, to put into the bricks and mortar, for sure, that protects us. So with any of these deals, though, we're going to have to scrutinize them and make sure that, again, that it's a win-win for the city and the county.
Okay.
But I'm excited, and I think we can hopefully get something done.
Okay. You know, more generally, the city's economic situation, you know, we had, there's been the ongoing discussion of what the city's budget shape is in, whether, you know, a dispute between the mayor and the controller over how deep the hole is. What is your take on the city's financial picture right now and the steps we're taking to get out of the current deficit situation?
Obviously, this is tough. These are tough financial times, but I think by and large, the city has been very responsive to the economic conditions. And this last budget, you know, I'm very proud, first and foremost, of the fact that we haven't cut core services and that we haven't had to furlough any employees. And so that's pretty good for a major city, because I know other cities around the country are having tougher times than we are. But having said that, we're looking at how we can cut even more spending. And so I'm really proud of our departments. They've come in with another additional 1% cut. Our city council offices will probably be cutting another 1%. So we're looking at ways to save money. I think the last plan I saw is that we're going to look at trying to be more efficient with our payroll services as well. And so hopefully that'll save some money there. There's a proposal on the table. I'm still kind of going through that proposal as we speak, of maybe consolidating some convention and entertainment services with the Greater Houston Visitors Bureau services. And I'm told that that could save about $2 million a year. So we are constantly looking at how to save and how to be more efficient and utilizing technology to save money. So I'm very confident that we're going to be okay. We do have reserves. Hopefully we don't have to touch them, but the fact that we do have double the reserves than when the mayor first took office, that's also good to know. But we have to continue to be mindful of what we spend and to make sure that we're delivering the core services.
It seems to me that in every discussion of the budget, what I hear is a lot of focus on the expenditure side, but I never hear anyone talk about the revenue side. And, I mean, of course, in recent years, City Council has lowered the property tax rate in Houston. And, you know, I mean, everybody likes doing that, but that does cost money.
Sure.
And, you know, it seems to me that if you raised the property tax rate by, you know, a penny, it wouldn't cost people a whole lot of money, but it would raise enough in the city to cover a pretty big chunk, if not all, of the current deficit. So why don't we talk about that? Are we taxing at the right level?
Yeah, that's certainly subject for debate. I know the mayor has rolled back the tax rate a couple times since he's been in office, and I think, you know, I think there's a way to hold the line on taxes and without increasing. But the other thing is, I want to make sure that we are delivering the services, that we are efficient, and that we're collecting revenue as well. That's part of it, is making sure that we're collecting from delinquent parking tickets, that we're collecting fines and fees, and that we're efficient with those money. So before we start talking about increasing the tax rate, I think we need to look at how we're operating currently. So, but you know, it's funny, I've heard other people mention it as well, and so I don't know why people aren't talking about it, but I assume when you have so many different folks running for office, the whole council basically, you know, is running for office, so maybe there's a political reason there. But you know, But you're right, it really hasn't come up. But I think we're just looking at the operations first and foremost.
Okay. Now, I believe the old 6th Ward is in your district.
And no.
No, it's not. All right. Well, I bring that up because, you know, District I certainly has its share of historic neighborhoods in it, and neighborhood preservation is an issue that, you know, has been on the front burner for a lot of, you know, certainly the older inner core neighborhoods lately. Are we at this point doing enough to enable those neighborhoods to do what they want to do to preserve themselves and yet not, you know,
not stifle development.
Sure. It's always an ongoing balance, Charles, but I'm really excited because I have Glenbrook Valley, which is a historic neighborhood in my district, and they're actually going through the historic preservation process as we speak, so they're getting their petition signed, and there's a lot of support for it, and so this would be one of the first in District I to go through it, and so I think they're going to be very successful. They're trying to preserve the architectural integrity of the neighborhood. We have several Frank Lloyd Wright-style houses that were built in the 50s, and people just love living there. And so I think we need to do more. We need to encourage our civic clubs to get organized, to show them the benefits of preserving the neighborhoods. And because of this, we're starting to see more young professionals returning into the inner city, returning to that part of town. And I'm really excited to see the potential and the future growth of that neighborhood and getting some of these vacant properties back on the tax rolls. So I think it is important. It's something that's cognizant. Councilmember Lovell's been the forefront of leading the charge on that. And so it's a good team, and we work together to try to help each other out in different districts and different neighborhoods. So I think we can... we look at this success, and we just need to build on it. But a lot of times it's just information and having access to information. Some neighborhoods don't know that they can do that or that they're eligible. There is a time requirement. You have to be I think neighborhoods have to be over 50 years old or so. And so some neighborhoods aren't quite there, some aren't. So, but I think it's really key that we have strong civic clubs and civic organizations because they can facilitate a lot of these. Petitions in this process.
Do you think the recent changes that council made to the Chapter 42 will help in this process?
Oh, absolutely. If we're going to get more, we need to do a better job of getting the tools, obviously, and so this is a step in the right direction as well. So I want to make sure that we the constituents have the tools. They know that we're fighting for preservation of our historic structures, and the other thing is that I have several historic churches in my district, especially the Fourth Ward area. So we're working with the clergy in those areas to preserve some of the facades, making parks, and helping them to raise funds for the development and preservation of the churches. So not only are there historic neighborhoods, but we do have historic buildings and churches that are part of this.
Now we're going to be electing a new mayor this fall. In what ways would you like whoever succeeds Mayor White to be like him or not like him?
That's interesting. So I've been so focused on my district and working, for my reelection. But obviously I want the qualities I'm looking for in a mayor is somebody that understands neighborhoods. That's been my focus. It has been a kind of a neighborhood approach to government and making sure that we have safe neighborhoods and the neighborhoods have amenities and that my neighborhoods have its fair share of projects, so I'm going to want to continue that. And the mayor has been very supportive of District I, and so especially in the CIP process. And so I'm going to want a mayor that understands the issues and the challenges of inner city neighborhoods. District I is one of the oldest, has some of the oldest neighborhoods and some of the oldest infrastructure. We have some sewer lines that were built in the 1920s that need to be remediated. So I definitely want to make sure that mayor understands the infrastructure challenges, but also some of the pressures that are put onto inner city neighborhoods. So I'm going to definitely look for somebody that knows where District I is, that knows the neighborhoods of Denver Harbor, Magnolia, Hobby Airport, Gardenville, and is very familiar with those constituents. So we'll see.
Do you have a preference for who for a candidate in the mayoral race?
So far I'm staying out of the race, but I'll have more to say on that in the next few weeks or so.
Okay. You, as it happens, do not have an opponent in November, so I think it's safe to say that you will be reelected. But nonetheless, give me the reason why the people in District I should vote for you for another term in office.
Well, first and foremost, I love my job, and I love and I enjoy serving my constituents in District I. We have a great team at City Hall. We have a great team, a great District I team, and we are. The bread and butter of that office is constituent services, and so we strive to do better, to make sure that all of our issues are addressed in the district. If we get a call, we try to turn it around, and get action taken. I think our experience, our dedication, our 24-hour service to the district, says a lot about what we're trying to do. But I want to continue the work that we've started, and I want to build on the successes. We have several park projects coming online this year, and I want to deliver more parks for my district. I want to continue to focus on public safety and keeping neighborhoods safe and making sure that we have enough police on the streets and that we continue to utilize overtime dollars wisely. But I want District I to continue to be a great place to raise a family. I have a family there now, and so I want to continue to make sure that all the families have an opportunity to grow up in a safe neighborhood and that they have access to city services, quality libraries, fire stations, and parks. So I'm ready to go. It's nice not having an opponent because we can focus on the work at hand and resolve constituent issues, and we're going to continue to do so.
All right, Councilmember James Rodriguez, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you.